C-168. Number 6B.
Yes, what did we do? Well, just to take it first historically, what happened after John Dolly left, we began to see the structure of the textbook, the 4x4 structure of the textbook, therefore the matrix of Christian Science. It was no more John Dolly's matrix, that was just showing the four reflected in the four orders of the synonym. Here we took a whole textbook of 600 pages and reduced it to a matrix that was showing the 4x4 presentation of what? Of a matrix we have seen in the mathematical definition needs two indices, the columns and the rows, and we could see that the columns were the four sides of the Holy City, as were Christ, Christianity, and Science in absolute Christian Science, and that the rows were also the four sides of the Holy City, of where Christ, Christianity, and Science, but in Christian Science. So the two indices were different, you see, and covered, so to say, the textbook of Christian Science, which is not the textbook of divine science, but the text of Christian Science. And Christian Science includes absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. So in one matrix, therefore, we could represent really a model that would represent really the whole textbook as a structure. The structure of the textbook, structured by various categories, the category of the four sides of the Holy City, the category of the capitalized term, because each chapter could be seen through the seven, and it was also touching on the category of the levels, because those two indices were indicated level categories, absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. So when I was contemplating really the difference between John Dolly's matrix, which was also 4x4, and the matrix of the textbook, which is a 4x4, I could say to myself, both are 4x4, and yet they are completely different. What has happened? What happened was that, without knowing it, the matrix was transformed. That something was not equal, not the same, in John Dolly's matrix and in the matrix of the textbook. Was not the same. What was not the same? This was then the big question. And for a long time, I couldn't really define it. And even today, I would have difficulty in defining it. And I have to leave it, so to say, on the little fire smoldering for a while. But what happened afterwards was becoming very, very clear. Very, very clear. Because once I had seen that structure of the textbook, I was asking myself, as other students were asking themselves, are there not further matrices? And so, for instance, the next one which I tackled were the prophets. I tackled them not because I wanted to see another matrix. It was only from a very secondary reason. John Dolly had interpreted the major prophets and some of the minor prophets, and I felt it would be nice also to decode the other minor prophets that he didn't decode, and so I worked on those minor prophets that were not decoded, and I could see that they too had a very clear order in themselves, that they would run either according to the order of the world or perhaps the four orders, etc. Anyway, when I had decoded the rest, and so we had the major prophet and the minor prophet decoded, I was asking myself, now what are these 16 prophets all about? Have they somehow a idea that goes right through those 16 prophets? And I could see, yes, what the prophets were telling, they're all about the Christ. It was all about that God will come to Israel and will do this and that and the other. So I began to see these 16 prophets were showing really the Christ idea. And I was saying to myself, why on earth do we have 16 prophets to show the Christ idea? Why can the Bible not teach it in one book? And so the question came, how does one book differ from the other book? How does one prophet differ from the other prophet? And so little by little one began to see that the difference was that they presented the Christ, all presented the Christ, but from different angles, some from the angle of the Word, some from the angle of the Christ, some from the angle of Christianity, and some from the angle of science. And suddenly those 16 prophets began to fall into a matrix of 4x4 too. So you had the textbook as a matrix of 4x4 and the prophets 4x4, and yet they had nothing in common with them, with each other. It's very different if I read the prophets or if I read the textbook. And yet underlying was something fundamentally the same. Afterwards, I tackled the epistles, because John Dolly only did the four Gospels and Revelation and all that was in between. He didn't decode. So one summer I took the time and said, all right, I want to see what all these epistles are all about, and began to decode one epistle after the other epistle. And so within each epistle, an order, somewhere in the Christ order, somewhere in the Word order, somewhere in the 4x4 order, like Hebrews, and so on. But I could see that each epistle had an inner structure. But the main question was, what have they in common? Have they something in common at all? And so, investigating that, one could easily see that they had one thing in common, because in the center of all the epistle was always man, therefore Christianity, the application of the Word and Christ in everyday life, and to live really the life of Christ, which is the idea of the Word. So suddenly one had another 4x4 matrix. They were again completely different than the prophets. Actually, I first had to learn Paul's language, and took me quite a while to learn his language, which was so different from the prophetic language or the language of the prophets. And so within a short time, I had three very big matrices: the textbook matrix, the prophet matrix, the epistle matrix. And so I had to ask myself, they are 4x4, outwardly they seem to be the same, and yet they are inwardly completely different. The message is absolutely different. So, what is the difference? Now, the difference is that the whole of each, I talk now of these three because I leave out John Dory's matrix, that the whole of these three, prophets, the epistle, and the textbook, the whole of them, I could easily define through one of the capitalized terms in the system. I could see the prophets were a 4x4 representation of the Christ, and not of prophets, not of people who prophesied, but of the Christ that they were showing, then the epistle that they would represent really to us the whole, namely Christianity, and that the textbook would therefore represent science or Christian science as a whole. And so you can now see what these people say, that structuralism is really a system of transformation. The system underlying all these three matrices, actually also Tondoli's matrix, was always the same, the 4x4. That was the same. But that system underwent the transformation. How? And now you see what is meant by transformation. Instead of always having the 4x4 under the whole roof category or roof title of the same, one can take one of those four, either the Word or the Christ or Christianity and science, and accentuate that as the leading idea. So the prophets had as a leading idea the Christ. So the title of the matrix was the Christ matrix in the prophets. You see, the Christ matrix. And now showing that Christ matrix from that point of view, looking at the 4x4. In the epistle, the title was Christianity. So one has taken another of those four sites of the city and has put them and transformed it to a main category or a main title. And putting Christianity on the top, we could see, well, how does a matrix 4x4 operate under the overall impact of Christianity? Mrs. Eddy came and took Christian science, the fourth side of the holy city, and put it right on the top of the matrix and said, I give you the Christian science matrix, and looking out from the Christian science matrix, you can see the 4x4 dynamics of being. See, the four are always the modus operandi, and so it gives, from the point of view of Christian science, the same model of 4x4. Do you see the laws of transformation? That structuralism takes what? Takes always the same system, the 4x4, the same system. But structure is something else than system. Structure is when we take the system and transform it. How do we transform it? What have we done? We have not added a single thing. It is still the infinite one. We only put the accent differently. So in the 4x4 in the prophetic age, you put the accent on the Christ. In the epistles, you put the accent on Christianity. In the textbook, you put the accent on Christian science. And so you transform the 4x4 constantly. Now, those who have been with me last year and this year, last year we have taken the Christ matrix through the prophets, this year we have taken the Christianity matrix through the epistles. Over many, many years you were with me when we did the textbook matrix, the Christian science matrix. You remember? We had those three matrices constantly under investigation, and they were all the 4x4. But, now comes again the but, huh? Now comes again what happens within the law of transformation. When one takes the same system, the 4x4, that's a system, and transforms it and puts the accent on the Christ, then, looking out from the Christ to the 4x4, every time then those 4x4 take on a slightly different accentuation. So that in the matrix, you remember, within the matrix, when we had the index I, that index which rules really Word, Christ, Christianity as a vertical. We had Word, Christ, Christianity, science in every one of those three matrices, but we defined them always differently. You remember? We defined them always differently. Still was the Word, but because the light is different, if in the Christ matrix, you see, you look at the Word vertical, then you define the Word differently because you look at it from the Christ, and therefore there we said the Word is the monopotency of God, good. But when we did the epistles and looked out from Christianity to the same Word in the vertical, we said then it has a different accentuation. Then it is really showing the grace of God. And then we take it in the textbook from the point of view of Christian Science and looked at the very same Word there. We said, then that Word is the revelation of God's nature. So all had a sense of the Word, but always differently accentuated. Which means, you see, this is structuralism with its laws of transformation, that the moment, you see, let me just intertwine quickly another symbol. If you have a spider web, that's like a system, huh? Like this, a spider web. What happens if you move just a little bit on that spider web here? The whole spider web is moved. Huh? Every point of intersection in that spider web is a little bit removed. It affects the whole system. The part is not the part. It is always reflecting the whole, and what happens in the part at once affects the whole. Can I symbolize it this way? And that's exactly what happens with those matrices. The moment you have the spider web nicely there, and you remove a little bit Christianity and say, this is the main thing, you remove every point of intersection in the spider web towards that Christianity. You give, so to say, to every element in, or I would say to every category within that matrix, a different connotation, a different accentuation. That's why then we have seen that the index I and the index J in those three matrices have a different definition, though fundamentally they were always Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. But Word means many things. Christ means many things. Christianity means many things. And so our science means many things. And every time you put it under the main impact of one of the main categories of being, under the Word or under the Christ, you give a different characteristic to every part in that matrix. To every part in that matrix. Yes? Now, is that so difficult when they say that structuralism is a method of procedure which transforms every problem first into a structural problem, and that the structure is a system of transformation? What you do, you always play with the same 15 root notions of being. Always with the 7 plus the 4 plus the 4. Those 15 root notions are our elements. These are the colored pearls or glass pearls in the kaleidoscope. You don't add anything, you don't take one away, but you only shake and you have another form. And every time you shake, it's a transformation. It's the same factors of being, isn't it? Same factors of being, the capitalized term, and if you shake them a little bit, it gives a different picture, a different structure. That's what came out slowly and slowly. Huh? It shows that actually, if we are mastering the capitalized terms and know how, what are the laws of transformation, then we can calculate infinitely. Yes. We can calculate infinitely. This is showing how what the science does, it reduces the infinite possibilities to some simple fundamental facts, which when we know how they are related, they again can calculate infinity. That's what you do in arithmetic. You have infinite possibilities of calculation. You reduce it to the 10 and the 4 operations, and you reduce it to 10 plus 4 to 14, and with those 14 you can make any calculation that is ever coming up within the realm of arithmetic. That's what Mrs. Eddy has done. She didn't know it perhaps, but we know it now today, and we can prove it. Isn't that wonderful? What has unfolded. So perhaps I also may like to show you something that has to do with that matrix and with that sense of structure, namely always that difficult point of a part. What are parts? Now, as I said, in the classical way of looking at things, in the classical science, one has always taken parts as the problem and has analyzed it to its constituting parts. Now, in structuralism, we also have parts. We have also problems that have to be resolved. But we resolve them in a different way. As we said, we first put them into the bigger frame of reference within which they are a part. So we try to see what are the bigger frame of reference. The bigger the frame of reference we can see, the easier it is to resolve the problem of the part. Because what is a part? And I just give you some definition how in structuralism the part is defined. They say parts have no genuine independent existence outside the structure in the same form that they have within it. Perhaps I haven't read it very nicely. I have to read it perhaps with different accentuation. So that parts have no independent existence. We always think that parts have an independent existence. That the blade of grass is a blade of grass that exists independent of the whole world. But apparently the Chinese way back many thousand years ago began already to see that if you cut the blade of grass that you shake the whole universe. That's structuralism. That if you change a part, if you pull in the spider web, somewhere a little bit, you move the whole spider web, and not only a part where you push. Huh? So a part has no genuine independent existence. A part can be what in our metaphysics? An idea. Say the idea of power. And the idea of power has no independent existence. We looked at this way, and she said power and thought, power is power. Huh? We don't need to say more than that. The power is power, and because that's its independent existence. And so structuralism says, no, that's not true. We have seen that it has no genuine independent existence outside the structure. Outside the structure. They have only an existence within the structure, and therefore not the same form that they have within the structure. That part has a completely different value outside the structure as it has within the structure. Why? I will go further than afterwards. Again, another definition is that the true nature of things lie not in things themselves. We all believed up to now that the true nature of a thing lies in the thing itself, or didn't we think that way? That, well, the thing is a thing because the nature of that thing is in that thing, and that constitutes that thing. So it's independent of a whole. So they say, no, the true nature of things lie not in things themselves, but where? But in the relationship which we construct between them. So these parts have only a meaning and receive only a meaning through the relationship to the other parts, to the context within they appear. That context must be big and big and bigger, and we would say the biggest is our frame of reference, our system of reference, the three main categories of being. So that an idea like power has by itself nothing at all, has nothing at all. It only gathers really what it has by putting it into the bigger frame of reference. If we put it into the infinite frame of reference, then we say the idea power is as big, qualitatively as big as the infinite one. And then power has power. Because we draw it, put it back into the biggest frame of reference which we know, and say the power of an idea, therefore, is the power of the infinite one. Therefore, it's the power of the world category, the power of the Christ category, the power of the Christianity category, and the power of the science category. That's then the second next frame of reference. Do you see what it means? Or they say the full significance of an entity, which is a part, is seen only when it is integrated into the structure of which it forms a part. So that something, an element, a problem, an idea, has only then significance and real significance when it is first put into, integrated in the structure of which it is a part. And that theoretical presentation that I have given now about the parts and the whole, we are going to see what the practical implication is in Christian Science. But first we make a break.